Osho, Nirvana, The Last Nightmare. Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 10.
The first question. During one of your lectures, we learned that if we try to leave our ego just by trying to be humble, for example, then the ego comes through humility. We also learned that the only way to get rid of the ego is meditation. But does not the ego come through that also? I ask this because I have seen live examples in the ashram. Let me answer you through an anecdote. A psychologist was giving a young man some personality tests. He drew a vertical line and asked, "What does this make you think of?" "Sex," said the young man. Next, the psychologist drew a circle, and "What does this make you think of?" "Sex," said the young man again. The psychologist drew a star, and "This," he asked. "Why, sex, of course," the young man said. The psychologist put down his pencil. "In my opinion," he said, "you have an obsession about sex." "I have an obsession?" protested the young man. "For goodness sake, who has been drawing all those off-color pictures?" If you are obsessed with the ego, wherever you go, you will find live examples of it. And you will think others are being egoistic. It is your projection. Once you become humble, the whole world becomes humble. Suddenly, not only the ego disappears from you, it disappears simultaneously from the whole world. To a non-egoistic person, the ego never comes across. Not that others become egoless because he has become egoless, but because he is egoless, he cannot see the egos of others. It simply disappears for him. It is your attitude. So the first thing to remember is, whatsoever you come across, first try to find the causes within you. Don't be worried why others are egoistic. Let them be if they are. They will have enough punishments for their egos. Their own egos will be punishing them enough. You need not be worried. Whenever you see somebody is egoistic, immediately turn within, close your eyes and try to find out the cause in you. That is going to help. If you find a cause within yourself, it can be dropped. It can be transformed. And if you become egoless, suddenly you become tremendously blissful. Why be worried about others? Just think of you. Be a little more selfish. You are trying to be too much unselfish, too altruistic. Be a little more selfish. Think of your own being and of your own wastage of life. Whatsoever you come across, the more possibility is that somewhere deep hidden, that is your problem. Watch it in this way. whenever you become angry, it is not because the others have created anger in you. It has already been there, may have been in a dormant state. The others can only provoke that is already there. Their insults cannot create anger in you. If it is not there, insults cannot create it. Insults can only bring it out if it is already there. Anger is not created by anybody else. It is there or it is not there. And if nobody is going to create the anger, then you will start trying to find some excuse. I have seen people angry with their shoes, throwing them in anger. I have seen people angry with the doors, slamming them in anger. What the door has done to you, what the shoe can do to you, but you cannot find human objects. Nobody has insulted you. Nobody has become an excuse for you. And you are bubbling with anger. You are already on the verge of explosion. Anything will do. Everything that you come across in others is more or less a projection of your own mind. This is the basic religious attitude. If you think it is coming from the other, that is the political attitude. That's why a politician goes on in changing others. A revolution is needed in the society, not in himself. The world has to be changed. Only then he can live peacefully. The politician can never live peacefully. It is impossible. The world is not going to be changed. It's not that easy. Your life is sad. And the world has remained almost the same. And it is going to remain almost the same. Only you can change. Because only you can become conscious. Consciousness is revolution. Consciousness is transformation. So become conscious within you. If you find somebody else as egoist, thank him immediately. He has helped you to become aware of your own ego. Be grateful to him and forget all about him. Now go within. Now try to find out where the cause lies. Why you felt that this man is egoistic? Somewhere your own ego has been hurt. The second question, every time I think I want to do something, the complete opposite happens. And I feel as if I am going crazy. It feels as if I have no more power over what is happening to me. Nobody has. Because nobody is. The power is possible if you are there. You are not there. The whole is. These individual egos are not there. These are false entities, just illusions. An illusion cannot have a power. That which is not, that which does not exist, how it can be powerful? Naturally, it is impotent. So the first thing to be understood, the ego is impotent. The whole is omnipotent. The part is important. But the part is important only if it tries to be separate from the whole. Once it dissolves itself into the whole, it becomes the whole. Then it is no more important. then that part also becomes omnipotent. If you are trying to do something, you will feel helpless. Life happens. It has nothing to do with doing. In the very effort, you are creating trouble for yourself. Don't try to swim upstream. Then you will feel as if the river is fighting you. It is not the river. The river is completely unaware of you. The river is completely unconcerned with you. The river is not doing anything to you. The river is not being nasty to you. Only you are trying to swim upstream. Hence you feel the river is going against. If you start floating with the river, all enmity disappears from the river. Not that from the river it was coming from you. If you are trying to do something, the opposite will happen. That is the misery of human ego. That is the hell. I have heard one very beautiful story. An ascetic, a great ascetic, who lived his whole life as a celibate, who remained virgin, and who was very much against sex. His whole life was just an effort to fight against sex, against love. Died. His chief disciple could not survive the shock. Just after a few hours, he also died. When the chief disciple reached the other world, he could not believe his eyes. He was shocked. The master was sitting there, the great ascetic, and Merlin Merlot was sitting in his lap, almost naked, kissing and hugging the man. He was very much shocked. But then, even in his dense head, understanding arose. He thought, of course, God is just and my great master has been well rewarded for all his austerities. So he went, touched the feet of his master and said, "Master, now I can believe that God is just. In heaven, you have been well rewarded for all your austerities, tapascharya, that you did in your life." The master looked very angry, and with a deep condemnation he said, "You blockhead, we are not in heaven and I am not being rewarded, she is being punished." The opposite is bound to happen. The ascetic is going to meet Merlin Merlot. It is going to happen. The ascetic has created the whole thing himself. In India, there are many stories of great rishis, great seers. I don't see why they have been called great seers, because they seem almost blind. The stories are there that whenever those great seers were deep in their austerities, in their fasts, in their sadhana, beautiful women from the other world will come, apsaras, heavenly damsels will come and try to seduce them. It seems almost impossible. Why it should happen? Why the other world is so much interested in seducing poor seers? And who is managing this whole nonsense? They are doing austerities to get out of the world, to stop the wheel of samsara. They are passing through the nightmare of nirvana. They are trying to become desireless. Why they are being punished? Why beautiful women come to them and try to seduce them? But still their stories are logical. Nobody is sending those beautiful women. There is nobody to send. There are no beautiful women to be sent. They are fighting upstream. The more you fight with sex, the more your fantasy becomes real. The more you avoid sex, the more you fight with it, the more you go against it, your own dreaming creates damsels of the other world around you. It is your own upstream effort. I am not saying that transcendence of sex is not possible. It is possible, but it is possible always. Almost always it is possible, but it is possible only if you flow with the stream, never against the stream. If you are not fighting with the stream, things will happen that you always wanted to happen, but because you wanted, they were not happening. There is a proverb that man proposes and God disposes. But why God should be so against man? Why he should be so cruel? There is no God to dispose anything. And if there is, he cannot be so cruel to dispose your poor desires. You don't ask much. You ask almost nothing, trivia. Why he should dispose? He can't be so miserly. But the real thing is, the moment you propose, in your very proposal, you have created the disposal. You are fighting against the stream. Now you are moving upstream. And you will feel as if the river is moving against you. Start floating with the river. And suddenly you will see the river is taking you to the ocean. And it is not against, it is very friendly. It is very lovely. No need to swim even. No need to make any effort. Effortlessly just float. And the river takes you. Don't waste your energy. The question is, every time I think I want to do something, the complete opposite happens. It will happen. It is your doing. Please stop proposing. Rather than allow happenings to happen, move with things. Don't bring your will and your ego. The whole is vast. And you are a tiny part. Accept this. Dissolve in the whole. Merge yourself in the whole. Don't try to create an illusion that you are separate. You are not. Once this illusion is dropped, and that is what I mean when I say drop the ego. Ego is nothing but the illusion of separation from the whole. Humbleness is nothing but a reunion with the whole, a remarriage with the whole. The ego is a divorce. Humbleness is a remarriage, a reunion. Unio mystica. When you are again united back with the original source. then all that you always wanted to happen starts happening. But it never happens till you stop wanting. This is the dilemma. If you go on wanting, your very want will create a situation in which it's not going to happen. And of course, the mind will say, make more effort. The mind will say, this time you lost. Next time bring more willpower. Willpower is a dirty word. The greatest stupidity there is the idea of willpower. The will belongs to the whole. It doesn't belong to the part. My leg cannot have its own will. If it tries to have its own will, it will be paralyzed. My hand cannot have its own will. The whole, my whole body, me, can have a will. We are just the hands and legs of the whole. We cannot have wills, the whole only. The whole wills, and everything happens to us. Once you accept this, all effort, all struggle is gone then. One moves effortlessly. All weight, heaviness from the head disappears. All headache disappears. In fact, head itself disappears. Then life is an ecstasy, a continuous bliss, an eternal celebration, a benediction. But you go on trying to do something. It is exactly there, precisely there where you miss. And the more you miss, the more you desire. A vicious circle is created. Over a friendly game of chess, Father Sagnesi said to Rabbi Ginsburg, tell me, Rabbi, have you ever tasted ham? Be truthful now. Once, said the Rabbi, reddening slightly, when I was in college, I must admit curiosity overcame me. And I had a ham sandwich. But tell me, Father, be truthful now. Did you ever, perhaps, with a girl? It was Father Sagnesi's turn to bless. He said, I must confess that once in college, before I was ordained, I did have a little. Silence fell. And then the Father said, with a sad smile, it is better than him, isn't it? The moment you fight with anything, you give it tremendous power. The moment you fight with anything, you give it tremendous attraction. The moment you fight with anything, it becomes infinitely inviting. Sex is not so beautiful as people think who have denied themselves. In fact, if sex is completely allowed, totally free, sooner or later one gets fed up with it. Already it is happening in the West. People are fed up with sex. Hence, the attraction for drugs. And because the governments go on denying drugs, the same they were doing with sex before, the drugs have a tremendous attraction. Once drugs are allowed, they will lose all attraction. Whatsoever is denied becomes tremendously powerful over you, because the mind goes on constantly fabricating fantasies around it. You try anything, try to fight with anything. Small things, if I tell you that to touch your nose is a sin, it is absolutely nonsense. And such an innocent thing, touching your nose, but try it for 3 weeks. That touching your nose is a sin, you will get crazy. You will find places where nobody is seeing and you will touch your nose. And you will enjoy, I tell you. And then you will feel guilty that you have missed one more opportunity of getting in heaven. And the more you will avoid it, and the more you will control yourself, the more suddenly you will feel what has happened. The nose was never attractive. You have never even bothered about it. You were not even aware that it exists. Suddenly, it becomes the very center of your mind. You will think of nose, beautiful noses. Not one rose of noses. Longer and longer and longer. And in your dreams you will touch 1,000 noses. And in the morning you will feel guilty. And you will have to go to a priest to confess that again you have done the same sin. This is what has happened. In my childhood, in my family, tomatoes were not allowed. Because I was born in a Jain family. And tomatoes look like meat. Just look, very innocent. You cannot find more innocent people than tomatoes. But they were not allowed. They had a tremendous attraction for me. Once, staying with a friend, curiosity overtook me. And he offered tomatoes and I ate. They were so beautiful, they have never been so beautiful since then. But in the night I vomited. I felt so guilty. And then when I vomited, I understood that the tomatoes are really very dangerous things. I had never vomited before that. My whole being was upside down. I couldn't sleep the whole night. And next day I fasted just to repent. Now it looks all stupid. But then it was relevant. And all the things, whether it is sex, whether it is food, or whatsoever, once it is denied, once an authority says no, it is wrong, suddenly your innermost unconscious mind starts thinking about it, imagining how to get it. And you go on projecting, and you go on coloring it, making it more and more beautiful. Drop all this nonsense. Float with life. Trust in life. And that's what I call trust in God. Forget all gods. They are man-made, manufactured by human mind. Trust life. And wherever life leads you, go with it. And don't try to swim upstream. And all that you would like will happen. But not because you like it. In fact, a deep desire for it exists in you because already life had planned it, has planned it to fulfill for you. The deep desire simply indicates that the life has planned it for you to be fulfilled. You just allow life, you float with life, and it will lead you to the promised land. That's why a deep desire goes on asking. People go on creating a paradise somewhere beyond the clouds. The paradise is here now. You create a paradise because you deny yourself many things and you desire many things and you go on fighting and the whole life becomes miserable. In this misery, you create hope. Because otherwise the misery will be too much. Everybody will commit suicide if there is no paradise. Because of paradise you go on, it is only a few days trouble, then everything will be okay. You will be with God in paradise. You are going never to be with God in paradise unless you are with God here now. Be with God today. And what is the way of being with God today? Don't fight, surrender. Surrender to life. And you are not surrendering to anybody. It is your life. So the moment I say surrender to life, don't create a duality in the mind. You are not surrendering to anybody else. It is your life. It is you. Infinitely you. Expended you. The third question, several sannyasins have told me that you do not approve of macrobiotics. Is this so? I wonder whether your criticisms were directed at obsessive attitudes towards diet rather than at the principles of macrobiotics. Macrobiotics is pure Taoism. There are no rules and no prohibitions. Its emphasis is on awareness, freedom, sensitivity, and flexibility. It has nothing at all to do with food fads, rigid diets, or obsessive attitudes. Brown rice is mistakenly regarded by some as the basis of macrobiotics, but it is only one element and can be used or discarded, recognized are ignored. Could you please comment? The first thing, I am against all fads. Irrespective of what the fad is, I am against all fads. Because fads attract obsessive people. Fads become hiding places for insane people. People who are abnormal, they hide themselves behind fads and they create systems, theories, dogmas to rationalize. I used to live with a woman. She was a very lovely woman, but almost crazy about cleanliness. The whole day she was cleaning the house. The whole day she was decorating for no purpose, because she never allowed anybody in the house. If guests will come, she will meet them in the lawn. I asked her, you continuously go on decorating and cleaning your house, but nobody I ever see is allowed in. She says, those people, they may make everything dirty. Then what is the purpose of it? She said, cleanliness is next to God. Now this woman is mad. Cleanliness has become just a hiding place. It has become a ritual. Now the whole day cleaning, she remains occupied. The whole day cleaning has become her whole life. It is a sheer wastage. But you cannot say that cleanliness is bad, cleanliness is good. So she has a reason. She is mad with a perfect rationality. Even her husband was not allowed to come into the drawing room. And she never allowed herself to have any child, because children are dirty and they will create trouble and they will make things messy. The whole life sacrificed at the altar of cleanliness. I said, of course, you have proved that cleanliness is second to God. You have made it an altar of God and you are sacrificing your whole life to it. But she will say, am I wrong? You cannot say she is wrong. Cleanliness is good, hygienic, but there is a limit to it. The faddist always goes beyond the limit. He is deep down very much troubled. I told the woman that you do one thing. For 3 days you don't clean the house. If you can remain sane for 3 days without cleaning the house, I will also join with you. And I will also clean your house the whole day. She says, 3 days without cleaning? That is impossible. I will go mad. She is already mad. So whenever there is someone who is hiding behind a fad, whatsoever the fad is, it may be macrobiotics or something else, I am against it. I am against the attitude of obsessiveness. Let me tell you one anecdote. A man came from the match. His wife looked up from the paper and said, look here, Fred, there is a report in the paper about a man who has just given his wife to a friend in return for a football season ticket. You are a keen fan, but you would not do a thing like that, would you? Fred said, of course, I would not. It is ridiculous and criminal. The season is half over. This is the mind of a fan, of a faddist. But these people can go on hiding behind beautiful reasons. Mahatma Gandhi was continuously concerned about his bowel movements. He was almost obsessive about it. Sometimes when your stomach is disturbed, one can think about it. But continuously pondering and meditating and brooding over it is nonsense. But he was continuously brooding, as if that is the greatest subject in the world to think about. he will do his prayers, or he is going to see the viceroy, or he is going to take a part in the round table conference which is going to decide the fate of India and its freedom, but first he will take enema. In his secretary's diary, you will be surprised. Enema is as much referred as God. Enema seems to be a second God. But if you argue with him, he will look perfectly clear about it, that the stomach has to be completely clean, because without a clean stomach the whole body gets toxins, this and that. And only with a clean stomach the mind can be clean. How can the mind be healthy without a healthy body? Now he will go on and on, arguing about it, thinking about it. But in fact, it is a fad and a sort of illness, and it doesn't sow a healthy mind. It sows an unhealthy mind. This type of attitude I am against. I have said to many sannyasins, because they come to me with their fads. One young man came and he said he has come to me to learn how to live only on water. Now I told him, you will make me a criminal. If I tell you how to live on water, you will die. He was lean and thin, almost at the verge any time he can collapse. But he has a fad that purity is possible only through water. Only water is pure and everything is impure. His eyes were getting yellow, ill. He is not eating well. His body is starved. And by his brain will start being feverish. And the more he will become feverish, the more he will make efforts to purify himself. I have to tell such people that you are moving in a very, very dangerous direction. Macrobiotic addicts also come to me. Now, this question is from Dharmananda. He has exactly caught the point. I am not against anything in particular, because I am not in favor of anything in particular. I am just in favor of life. Life, it is tremendous richness. So if, as Dharmananda says, I don't think that macrobiotic people will agree with him. Now, let me read the whole question again. I don't think macrobiotic people will agree with him, because he has disturbed the whole thing. He says, macrobiotics is a pure Taoism. No principle, no theory can be pure Taoism. Even Taoism is not pure Taoism. Lao Tzu resisted himself his whole life. He denied his disciples. He rejected all appeals to him to make a theory about his whole principle, because he said, once Tao is said, it is no more Tao. Truth cannot be said, cannot be theorized, only in the end, and that too under pressure. He was leaving China. He was coming towards India, it seems. Everybody has to come finally to India. India is not a geographical point. It is the very source of all human consciousness. Everyone who wants to be reoriented has to come to the Orient. Orient simply means orientation. Lao Tzu, of course, Chinese scholars never say that he was going to India. That offends their ego. They say he was going to the south, but India is the south. They say he moved towards south, but India is the south for China. And of course, it seems meaningful, Lao Tzu coming back to China, coming back to India. That seems absolutely relevant. Everybody has to come. India is everybody's home. He was caught on the boundaries of China by the government officials, and they said, we will not allow you to go out of the country with your treasure. You have to leave the treasure. He asked, what do you mean? They said, you have to write a book before you leave our country. You know something. You have to write it down and hand over to the government. Then you can leave. So he was forced on the boundary by these officials. 3 days. Fast he went and wrote the whole Tao Te Ching. But the first line he says, Tao cannot be uttered. And the Tao that is uttered is no more Tao. So even Taoism is not pure Tao. The ism makes it impure. So forget about macrobiotics, that it can be pure Taoism. It is a theory, a hypothesis. There are no rules and no prohibitions. If there are no rules and no prohibitions, then why be unnecessarily worried about macrobiotics? Then what is the point of calling yourself that you are a follower of macrobiotics if there are no rules and no regulations? There are. I would like that Dharmananda is right. I would like perfectly, that is what my whole standpoint is. But Dharmananda cannot be approved by macrobiotic people. They have rules and regulations. In fact, Dharmananda is smuggling me into myobiocritics. He is my follower, of course, it can be understood. Its emphasis is on awareness, freedom, sensitivity and flexibility. It has nothing at all to do with food fads. Rigid diets are obsessive attitudes. No, they will not agree with you, Dharmananda. They will not. Macrobiotics has nothing to do with brown rice. They are mad about brown rice. They think brown rice is God. And unless you live on brown rice, you will miss. But he says brown rice is mistakenly regarded by some as the basis of microbiotics, but it is only one element and can be used or discarded, recognized or ignored. But then what remains? Even if brown rice is discarded, ignored, and there are no principles and no regulations, and it is pure Taoism, that what remains then? Nothing remains. Then I can happily say, yes, be a microbiotic follower, no problem. I am against fads. I am against a disciplined life. I am not against discipline. I am against disciplined life. Discipline should come moment to moment from your inner being. It should be an inner light, not imposed from the outside. One should move in deep response to life. One should not follow any doctrine. Because if you follow a doctrine, then you have already a conclusion with you. You live through that conclusion. You live from a center already fixed. Then you are not free. You cannot be flexible. Your principle, your idea, your center, your conclusion will not allow you to be flexible. You will react according to your conclusion. But if you are free, and each moment decides its own conclusion, it is not carried over from the past, then it is perfectly okay. Then you have a discipline, real discipline, but you don't have a disciplined life. Any man who is really alive has no character, cannot have a character. Character is always dead, a dead structure around you. Carried over from the past experience. If you act out of your character, you don't act at all, you simply react, you don't respond. Response is immediate. Life creates a situation, a challenge, and you respond. You respond out of your being with no center, with no conclusion. Not through the past. Here now comes the response, pure, virgin. That discipline I appreciate. That discipline I love. But any other discipline that you force yourself in it, that you practice it, is dangerous. That is going to kill you. That's how many people are already dead. Their discipline has killed them. The fifth question: what is the difference between going within and going nowhere? There is no difference. Going nowhere is going within. Going within is going nowhere. The difference is only that of terminology. If you ask Upanishads, they say go within. If you ask Buddha, he says, go nowhere. And if you ask me, both mean the same. But still, nowhere is better than within. Why? Because the moment you say within, you have created a dichotomy of without and within. As if God is only within and not without. God is without also. God is within also. It is the same life that is within me and without, within you and without. It is the same phenomenon. So why create a dichotomy? When Buddha says go nowhere, that is what nirvana is, going nowhere. If you understand going nowhere simply means going not. Going nowhere does not mean going nowhere. It simply means going not. Just being. Not going at all, because all going is motivated. All going is because of desire. When there is no desire, everything stops. When there is no desire, there is no movement. Time stops. Future drops. Past disappears. Only this moment. Only this moment. Just the other day, I quoted Basso's haiku. The ancient pond. A frog jumps in. Plop. Time has stopped. In Japanese, it is even more beautiful. That cannot be translated. If I try exact translation, then it will be like this. Ancient pond. Frog, jump in. A process. When we say a frog jumped in, it shows as if something has ended. Finished, complete. In Japanese, it is not a frog jumped in. It is a frog jump in. Just the process. Plop. The sound. And everything has stopped. Basso has made a picture also of that frog. And the pond. If you look deep into the frog's eyes, you will find Bodhidharma sitting there. The eyes of the frog are almost like Bodhidharma, plopping out. A moment when time stops. And why the frog is jumping in? There is no why. A jump in. For no motivation. For no desire. It just happens. It just happened that the frog found himself jumping in. A stirring, the pond stirred, the sound, the air stirred, and then nothing. Nothing was before, nothing is after, just in between and happening. It is neither coming in, it is not neither going out. It is going nowhere. It is not going at all. A moment when everything stops, an unmotivated moment, it does not mean that you will not be walking. You may jump in the ancient pond, That is not the point. But there is no motivation for nothing. You move for the sheer joy of movement. You breathe for the sheer joy of breathing. You don't desire anything out of it. You don't desire even the next moment. Plop. This moment is enough. Buddha's saying, going nowhere is better expression. But don't be caught in words. All Buddhas mean the same. Jesus, Mahavir, Zarathustra, Lao Tzu, or Gautam Buddha. Whatsoever their expressions, they all mean the same. Don't try to be scholarly. And don't be a word chopper. It is all the same, whether you call it coming in, or even you can call it going out. Christianity, Islam, Judaism, they all say God is there. Thou. Somewhere outside you. You have to fall in love with that and disappear in that love. Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, they say God is in. Somewhere within you. You have to disappear there. But these are all ways of saying because God is out and God is in, because all outs and all ins are within Him. Don't be a word chopper. Otherwise, you can go on and on playing with words. Let me tell you one anecdote. The last time I gave you money, said the old lady, you promised you would not walk straight into the pub and spend it. That's right, said the tramp. Well, you did. Lady, don't you know the difference between walk and a sprint? Don't be a word chopper. Whether you run into the pub or you walk in, it is all the same. The tramp must have been a very clever man. He is saying, lady, don't you know the difference between a walk and a sprint? I had promised not to walk. I never promised not to run. Remember, words can be a dangerous game. The whole point is be unmotivated. Then whether you go out or you go in or go somewhere or go nowhere is irrelevant. Be unmotivated. People come to me and they say we would like to be happy. Their whole life is motivated. They would like to be happy. And I feel very sad for them. Because happiness is not a motivation. You can be happy either this moment or you will never be happy. So you cannot say, I would like to be happy tomorrow. That is foolish. And happiness needs no prerequisites, no prerequisites. Just see the point of it. You can be happy right now as you are. If you really want to be happy, then don't try to be happy. Just be happy. Who is blocking the way? Who is hindering you? Who is forcing you to be unhappy? But you say, right now, I have to be unhappy, but tomorrow I would like to be happy. That tomorrow is going to be the same. It will come as a today. This today was also tomorrow yesterday. And yesterday you told me, I am going to be happy tomorrow. If this is the way, if this is your logic, happiness is never going to happen. It is already happening, just be happy. You give it a try. Just for 24 hours, remain happy. Whenever you catch yourself getting unhappy again, give a good jerk and be happy. Shake the whole body and be happy again. It is just a knack. It has nothing to do with the tomorrow or future. It is just a knack, an art. I have never seen any situation in which a man cannot be happy. And I have also not seen any situation in which a man cannot be unhappy. It depends on you. It is your decision. Happiness comes when you remain in an unmotivated moment, a sheer delight in being. The sixth question, how to be creative while doing jobs which seem to not leave any space for creativity, like cleaning, etc. It is from Krishna Radha. She cleanses. But I also do the same thing. Every morning, every evening, 24 hours. Cleaning your mind, cleansing. But I never feel that there is any need for any other creativity. Cleaning a floor can be a tremendous creative act. Remember, creativity has nothing to do with any particular work. Creativity has to do something with the quality of your consciousness. Whatsoever you do can become creative. Whatsoever you do can become creative if you know what creativity means. Creativity means enjoying any work as meditation. Doing any work with deep love. If you love me and you cleanse this auditorium, it is creative. If you don't love me, then of course it is a chore, it is a duty to be done somehow. It is a burden. Then you would like some other time to be creative. What you will do in that other time? Can you find a better thing to do? Are you thinking that if you paint, you will feel creative? But painting is just as ordinary as cleaning the floor. You will be throwing colors on a canvas. Here you go on washing the floor, cleaning the floor. What is the difference? Talking to somebody, a friend, and you feel time is being wasted, you would like to write a great book. Then you will be creative. But a friend has come. A little gossiping is perfectly beautiful. Be creative. All the great scriptures are nothing but gossips of people who were creative. What I go on doing here? Gossiping. They will become gospels someday. But originally they are gossips. But I enjoy doing them. I can go on and on for eternity. You may get tired someday. I am not going to get tired. It is sheer delight. It is possible one day you may get so much tired that you disappear. And there is nobody, and I will be talking. If you really love something, it is creative. But this happens to everybody. Many people come to me, when they come for the first time, they will say, any work, Bhagwan, any work, even cleaning. Exactly, they say, even cleaning. But your work, and we will be happy. And then after a few days, they come to me and they say, cleaning. We would like to have some great creative work. Let me tell you one anecdote. Worried about their lackluster sex life, the young wife finally persuaded her husband to undergo hypnotic treatment. After a few sessions, his sexual interest was kindled again. But during their lovemaking, he would occasionally dash out of the bedroom, go to the bathroom, and come back again. Overcome by curiosity, the wife followed him one day to the bathroom, tiptoeing to the doorway. She saw him standing before the mirror, staring fixedly at himself and muttering, "She is not my wife, she is not my wife." When you fall in love with a woman, of course she is not your wife. You make love, you enjoy, but then things settle. Then she is your wife. Then things become old. Then you know the face, you know the body, you know the topography. And then you get bored. The hypnotist did well. He suggests simply, while making love to your wife, you go on thinking, she is not my wife, she is not my wife. So, Krishna Radha, while cleaning, you go on thinking you are painting. This is not cleaning. This is great creativity. And it will be. It is just your mind playing tricks. If you understand, then you bring your creativity to every act that you do. A man of understanding is continuously creative. Not that he is trying to be creative. The way he sits is a creative act. Watch him sitting. You will find in his movement a certain quality of dance, a certain dignity. Just the other day we were reading the story of the Zen master who stood in the hall with great dignity, dead. Even his death was a creative act. He did it perfectly well. You cannot improve upon it. Even dead, he was standing with dignity, with grace. When you understand, whatsoever you do, cooking, cleaning, life consists of small things. Just your ego goes on saying these are small things. You would like some great thing to do, a great poetry. You would like to become Shakespeare or Kalidas or Milton. It is your ego that is creating the trouble. Drop the ego and everything is creative. I have heard a housewife was so pleased with the promptness shown by the grocer's boy that she asked him his name. "Shakespeare," replied the boy. "Well, that is quite a famous name. It should be. I have been delivering in this neighborhood for almost 3 years now. I like it. Why bother about being Shakespeare? 3 years delivering in a neighborhood, it's almost as beautiful as writing a book, a novel, a play. Life consists of small things. They become great if you love. Then everything is tremendously great. If you don't love, then your ego goes on saying, this is not worthy of you. Cleaning, Krishna Radha, this is not worthy of you. Do something great. Become Joan of Arc. All nonsense. All Joan of Arc's nonsense. Cleaning is great. Don't go on an ego trip. Whenever the ego comes and persuades you for some great things, immediately become aware and drop the ego. And then by and by you will find the trivia is sacred. Nothing is profane. Everything is sacred and holy. And unless everything becomes holy to you, your life cannot be religious. A holy man is not what you call a saint. A saint may be just on the ego trip. And he will look to you also a saint because you think he has done great deeds. A holy man is an ordinary man who loves ordinary life, chopping wood, carrying water from the well, cooking, cleaning. Whatsoever he touches becomes holy. Not that he is doing great things, but whatsoever he does it greatly. The greatness is not in the thing done, the greatness is in the consciousness that you bring while you do it. Try, touch a pebble with great love, it becomes a Kohinoor, a great diamond. A smile, and suddenly you are a king or a queen. Laugh, delight. Each moment of your life has to be transformed by your meditative love. When I say be creative, I don't mean that I'll go and become great painters and great poets. I simply mean, let your life be a painting. Let your life be a poetry. Always remember it. Otherwise, the ego is going to land you in some trouble. Go to the criminals and ask, why they have become criminals? Because they could not find any great thing to do. They could not become a president of a country. Of course, all persons cannot become presidents of a country. So they killed a president. That is easier. They became as famous as the president. They were all on the newspapers in the front page with their pictures. A man, just few months before, killed 7 persons. And he was asked why, because those 7 persons were totally unrelated to him. He wanted to become great, he said. And no newspaper was ready to publish his poems, his articles. They were refused from everywhere. And nobody was ready to publish his pictures. and life was fleeting. So he killed 7 persons. They were not related. He was not angry with them. He just wanted to become famous. Your politicians and your criminals are not different type of people. All criminals are political and all politicians are criminals. Not only Richard Nixon. Poor Richard Nixon was caught red-handed, that's all. Others seem to be more clever and more cunning. Mistress Moskowitz was bursting with pride. "Did you hear about my son Louis?" she asked her neighbor. "No. What is with your son Louis?" "He is going to a psychiatrist. Twice each week he is going to a psychiatrist." "Is that good?" "Of course it is good. $40 an hour he pays. $40. And all he talks about is me," said the mother. The mother is feeling very happy. Never allow yourself this tendency for being great, famous, someone bigger than life size. Never. Life size is perfect. To be exactly life size, to be just ordinary, is perfectly as it should be. But live that ordinariness in an extraordinary way. That is what a nirvanic consciousness is all about. Now let me tell you the last thing. If nirvana becomes a great goal for you to be achieved, then you will be in a nightmare. Then nirvana can become the last and the greatest nightmare. But if nirvana is in small things, the way you live them, the way you transform every small activity into an holy act, in a prayer, your house becomes a temple. Your body becomes the abode of God. And wherever you look and whatsoever you touch is tremendously beautiful, sacred. Then nirvana is freedom. Nirvana is to live the ordinary life so alert, so full of consciousness, so full of light, that everything becomes luminous. It is possible. I say so because I have lived it so, I am living it so. When I say it, I say with authority. When I say it, I am not quoting Buddha or Jesus. When I say it, I am quoting only myself. It has become possible for me. It can become possible for you. Just don't hanker for the ego. Just love life, trust life. And life will give you all that you need. Life will become a blessing for you, a benediction. Enough for today.